G'day, gang, and welcome back to an episode of Upcoming Attractions. As always, I'm your host, Matt Vella, and with me today is a very special guest, Zoheb Ali from Midnight Double Feature. How you doing, buddy?
Hello, man. Thank you so much for having me back. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to talk to you after a very long time and talk about the show.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. So guys, today we're going to be talking full spoilers of Ms. Marvel Season 1. We're going to be talking about the whole lot. If you don't want spoilers, first of all, you're late because we're late to recording this. So what are you doing? Get onto it. And yeah, we're really excited about it. We're recording this one in particular because Zoe messaged me. And he's like, dude, I got to talk about this show. Get me on the show. So totally excited to get through that. Before we do, though, just a quick little bit of housekeeping. For those who don't know, you know, may have noticed Upcoming Attractions have been gone for a while. Yes, I haven't been the best. And we are releasing some like lost episodes, as we call it. But we got to bring you something new to keep you excited for us to return. So here we go. Let's get straight into it. Dude, before we get into your overall thoughts of the show, I know something you're particularly passionate about is the representation aspect of Ms. Marvel and your personal connection to it. So do you want to just tell me a little bit about that before we get into the actual show itself?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, like, that's probably the biggest reason why I messaged you asking to come on. Like, let's talk about it. How many other brown Muslim guys do you know? I mean, look. No, you probably know heaps, but anyways.
I'm from Blacktown, so there's a couple around.
Exactly. So when I messaged you, this is how long it's been, right? So I messaged you just after episode 4 aired. And you know, obviously now we're a couple of weeks out from the finale, so it's been a very long time, and I've happened to see how the rest of the show played out, but none of the plot elements or anything like that have, it's funny, I have such a weird relationship with this show watching through it, because none of the plot elements or like how things ended up or how Kamala's story factored into how I felt watching it in terms of like how it brought about the representation angle of things. So I was watching this and I was like, man, like this, I feel seen. And it's funny because, like, you know, this is how, and I don't want to, you know, put myself in the shoes of others, but I remember when Black Panther came out and it was such a huge thing for young African Americans, right? I mean, you know, like how often do you see an African American superhero in film? Outside of Blade, but like, you know, actually like embracing the African culture, you know, and like how often do you see that kind of cultural representation in a mainstream movie or a mainstream TV show put out by one of the biggest corporations out there? I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of wild. And I started it. Here's my thing. I wasn't initially going to watch this. I was going to skip this altogether. The reason for that is because the trailers didn't really wow me. And I heard it was more sort of like targeted towards a younger audience, which it absolutely is.
Totally.
Yeah. And it dropped and I didn't watch it for like 2 days because I was like, oh, I'm not really into it. And then, like, you know, one day I was just bored and I was like, let me watch this first episode. And man, that first episode absolutely rocked. It might be one of the best, probably one of the best episodes in the entire season. I mean, that first episode, yeah. Just in terms of like introducing us to the world and the aesthetic of it and stuff like that. But like, not only that, just the little things like Kamala's relationship with her parents and the way her mother would, baby her, and you know, the Muslim culture and the restrictions of the Muslim culture, you know, like not all of this is, you know, not all of this can apply to Peter Parker, right? Let's say Peter Parker is 10 years younger, he's actually got parents. You know, like not all of this, you know, come like, you know, don't go to AvengerCon applies, right? I mean, of course that does. But then you also have like the cultural elements of it, like, you know, Kamala not being able to wear skimpy clothes, right? I mean, like, yes, I know that applies also to Caucasian families. But I mean, it goes more so to the Muslim / Islamic culture as well, because you know, there is this whole thing about covering up, and you know, Western Muslim families, like those living in America and in Australia, don't wear the burqa and stuff like that. But there is sort of like a nice middle ground. You know, there's a nice little sort of like, yeah, a middle ground. But then there's also the mosque element of it as well, and the way that the mosque is persecuted by law enforcement authorities in this, namely damage control. But, you know, I love that damage control also mentioned the FBI, you know, and there's a whole element of that. But then also when they're in the mosque, I think it's episode 2, might be episode 1, when Nakia and Kamala are in the mosque and they're separated from the men, because that is true. There's always like a partition, you know, before we do get to the partition, you know, separating the females from the males. And there's always the whole, yes, the males always get like the better part of the mosque than the females, and the air conditioning's better. And it's kind of insane how on the ball and how crazy accurate every single element of the Muslim culture that is portrayed is. Bishop K. Ali is the creator, no relation. you know, I was listening to an interview with her, and she was like, man, like, when I got hired for this, I made sure that myself and the writer's room really made this as authentic as possible, or tried to make it feel as authentic as possible. And it absolutely does, you know, like down to the halal kebabs, like, you know, like, and like, you know, the kebab guys, like, you know, yeah. Like it's just so rich and vibrant, and full of cultural energy. Like even Eid, right? I think it's episode 2 when they go to the Eid festival behind the mosque, which, by the way, happens here as well. If you go to the Ruta Hill Mosque, you know, there's the Eid festival that happens behind the mosque as well. There's rides, there's, you know, amusements and stuff like that. And also the cliques within the Muslim community, Indian, Pakistani Muslim community. You know, we do get like the little mean girls sort of like section of like, here are the plastics, here are the little, you know, whatever.
I was gonna say it's very mean girls that moment. It's and so it's accurate. Well done. Yeah.
It's so accurate. You know, you've got the aunties that are gossiping and all that shit, like that all happens. You know, I watched this entire series with my parents, and I didn't know from episode 1 what direction this was going to go in terms of like particularly Muniba, who is Kamala's mother. So Muniba is Kamala's mother, and you know, she has this sort of disdain for her mother and her grandmother, particularly the great grandmother, who quote betrayed the family. And you know, you know my sort of recent personal history, and I'll say it here on the podcast, like I kind of sort of did a bit of a I kind of like separated from my family very recently, relatively recently sort of thing. So like, you know, I declared that I didn't really believe in religion, and you know, I think it's okay for someone who is 28 years old to choose what they believe in. But there are, you know, cultural sort of like there are cultural things that families stick to, you know, and people think that the values of a person should align with religious values, and they're one and the same when they're actually not, in my opinion. So when it comes down to that moment between Muniba and her mother, and they're talking about, you know, you could have, like, you know, like, I always loved you, like, you know, like, there's always that whole, you know, like, you left me kind of thing. And I'm just like, I'm watching it with my parents in the background, and I'm just like, oh God, like, this is kind of, this is kind of real, man. But like, you know, not only that, but like the, you know, we'll get to just how fleshed out the villains are in this, because they're not really that fleshed out. But I, I do dig the parallels between, what are they called again?
The clandestines.
The clandestines. Yes, I do dig the parallels between the clandestines being, well, you know, like them being like this kind of like shrapnel or splintered group off from like the rest of like whoever this race is, kind of thing. So I like that they're kind of the outsiders. I like that this show is pretty much all about the outsiders. You know, just watching this show kind of like really made me think about myself, made me think about my place in the world, and whether religion should play a part in my life. And I know it's a stupid Marvel show, and it absolutely is, but I didn't think at any point it would have that effect on me when I started the show, and it absolutely did.
Yeah, man. Look, let me ask you, because so guys, we will get into talking about superpowers and all the comic book stuff, but I really want to dive in on this topic with Zoe here, because I know it is it's important to you, and I believe you bring a unique perspective that not the typical Marvel fanboy would have. So I think that's interesting. I've got two questions for you. The first one is, going back to you watching this show with your Muslim parents, first of all, what did they think of the show, and how did they react to it? Because I'm guessing, I know your dad's watched a few Marvel stuff, but like your mum's not a bit much of a Marvel fan, is she?
No, Dad loves Marvel. So Dad loves Marvel. I take him to watch every Marvel movie, except we haven't seen Thor Love and Thunder yet, because I'm not rushing out to see Thor Love and Thunder for a second time yet at the moment. But, you know, like Dad loves Marvel. Like, he's all up in the Endgame and shit. Like, you know, he loves that. But Mum, she's not well-versed in superheroes at all, if any. You know, the only dramatic TV show she's ever watched is Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. So, you know, like she's not that well versed in it. So starting this show with both of them, I mean, they were in from the beginning. I mean, like once we got Kamala referring to her grandmother as Nani, which is exactly what I call my grandmother. Like, you know, like it's so ingrained, and it feels so rich and legitimate. I think legitimate might be the word to use, because, you know, if I'm, you know, my parents have been Muslim for how, like, you know, for their entire lives, right? So like they know, they can smell a fake, right? They can smell when their leg is being pulled. So, you know, like they absolutely adored it, and they look forward to it every week. And, you know, while I felt awkward and guilty sort of watching the show at points, especially when it comes to my neighbor and my mother, and sort of like running away from family kind of thing, I don't know if they did. We haven't had that conversation. We didn't have that conversation. I don't think we will. But I mean, look, it's just the way things go sometimes. But like ultimately they loved it, I think. We can talk about the end. I think ultimately, you know, I'll talk about the show and what I think of the show. Ultimately, I think my criticisms of the show tie into what they think as well. So I guess I'll just say that I did think it was rushed towards the end. And I think they could also feel that it was a little rushed. Like, it's like, oh, Maniba is already accepting of the fact that she's a superhero. That's a little quick. Like, you know, it's like, it's just,
let's get into that, man.
Yeah.
My biggest criticism with the show actually ties into a few instances here and there where they kind of skip over some important plot points, but like character moments where motivations feel like they can change rather quickly. The worst of which is when they go overseas. Sorry, which country do they go
Pakistan.
To? Pakistan, right? When they catch the plane to Pakistan. So the episode ends before they leave with, oh, we have to go on the, did you see the train? You have to come to Pakistan. And then the next scene of the first episode, they're on the plane, the parents are with it, and they're saying, I can't tell you where we're going. It's like, I'm sorry, I don't care who you are. No middle-class family just picks up and goes overseas the next day. Like, that's thousands of dollars in flights. That's Like, I really wish the writers came up with either A, a scene where she has to convince her parents to go, or B, maybe they would have done a scene where, or she, they would have found another way to take her to Pakistan, you know? And I get, like, they probably wanted the family all there, but, like, there's better ways they could have written around it. I'm guessing maybe they had to rush it out or something. I don't know what it is, but things like that, like, kind of ruin the immersion for me. And then again, like you said, at the end, it really feels like they rushed through some of that stuff. Like, at the start of the show, her mother is like, I don't trust you. And you're a really responsible girl. And by the end of the show, she's like, I trust you, even though now she's sneaking out of the house, getting in fights, having little superhero battles. Like, hang on, as a mom, now you should be trusting her even less, right? Like, I know they went through some emotional character moments, but...
Well, you can absolutely see what the character arc for Muneeba is, right? I mean, the acceptance of her daughter being the person that she's always meant to be, but, like, it doesn't flow in 6 episodes. I don't think you personally need 18 episodes in a season.
Yeah.
But I think
10 maybe? 8?
I think 10 or 8. I think 8 might be the sweet spot kind of thing. It's just strange that, you know, you can't have... And again, I don't think that much time passes between episode 1 and episode 6. Like, you know what I mean? In the world. I mean, obviously, I'm, you know, 6 weeks past for us. But, like, in the world, like, I don't think that too much time passes between AvengerCon and the showdown at the school. So it doesn't necessarily make a ton of sense for... I can understand her father just to an extent. I don't think, you know, not as much as it kind of portrayed to be, but certainly probably not Muneeba. But, you know, it's strange because Muneeba does go on this journey as well, right? I mean, she kind of goes on this whole path with her mother kind of thing, and the mother sort of like telling her that, you know, we're family, you know, we're important to each other, you know, no matter what kind of thing. So
her character is surprisingly three-dimensional for that type of character. Like, generally those type of side characters are the ones that get sort of swept aside. They're just a figure of authority, but, like, you can relate to their parents a lot. Like, there are many times it's like, hey, listen here, kid, you're being a little brat. I'm on your parents' side in this part. You know, you shouldn't be sneaking out at night or whatever. Or, you know, that scene where, like, her dad dresses up as the Hulk and they offer her a costume. She's like, no. Like, I really felt sad for the dad. Like, he was heartbroken. And that's really well done how they did those characters. I think, look, we sort of hinted at before, but I wanted to talk about our overall thoughts, but I feel like we've kind of, it's pretty much implied. We both like the show. I think it's fair to say. But we acknowledge there are some flaws, correct?
Yeah, I think there's flaws in every Marvel show. I think this is the best Marvel show. I'm just going to go ahead and say that because
top three.
I'm definitely biased, obviously. I'm definitely biased. But I mean,
it might be in my top two. I think it's the best world building, and I think it's the most well-rounded show.
Right.
You know? I don't know. Like, I'm very, again, I'm biased too, because, like, I love WandaVision outside of it being a Marvel show as well.
Oh, yeah. Here's the thing, though. But I really like Loki. I wanted to spend more time with Kamala and her friends and her family interacting than the actual Marvel stuff. And I think that kind of echoes, because I've listened to a few podcasts talk about this. But, like, in that first episode when we're actually with her at school and, you know, she's meeting Kamran for the first time and there's all this, like, you know, back and forth with, God damn it, I'm forgetting. What's the white boy? Bruno. Jesus Christ.
Bruno, yeah. We don't
very
talk
much
about
like
Bruno.
Kamran. I forgot Bruno's name. But, you know, like, all of that is so much more interesting. And her driving lesson. I mean, you know, all of this is so much more interesting to see her navigate this coming of age in a world of superheroes sort of thing. You know, like, where superheroes exist, where Carol Danvers is flying around somewhere in the universe and she's absolutely obsessed with her and people are going to AvengerCon and stuff like that. You know, that first episode hits so high for me because we get so much of that and so little of the superhero stuff. Like I said, I'm not saying that I'm not saying that, you know, there should be zero superhero stuff. It's just, I think that first episode walks the line between TV and superhero stuff very well.
I would say of all the Marvel shows, this Miss Marvel and WandaVision are the only Marvel shows that take full advantage of being a TV show. Like when I watch Hawkeye or Moon Knight, I look at them and I go, this should be a movie. Like it feels just like a long movie.
Right.
But like WandaVision suits a TV show because it's doing the sitcom format. So that gets a free pass, right? But what Miss Marvel does so well that I feel like the other shows don't do as well is one of the advantages of television is you can spend more time with your characters and like especially the supporting characters. And that's why it's so well good at world building, you know? You get to meet the community. It's the Jersey City is a character. And more specifically, like the Muslim community is a character. Like if this is a movie, we would not get the mosque politics of someone running for, was it mosque president or something like that? Yeah, that's right, on the board. And we wouldn't have time for all that because it's like, oh no, it's been 20 minutes. We need to have a fight scene so we can like people can eat their popcorn and stuff, you know? So I feel like this is one of the only Marvel shows that like I go, oh, okay, this couldn't be a movie. This has to be a show. Otherwise you don't get to do this stuff.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. All that like coming of age stuff is the best stuff of it because I think because they have the time to do it. Like the problem with some of the Spider-Man movies is like they want to do John Hughes, but they don't have the time to do that and be superhero film. Like I feel like all three Spider-Man movies are meant to be John Hughes inspired, but only Homecoming feels like it's really doing that. We're only seeing the kids in high school and all that. So yeah, that'd be a big part.
And one of my favorite sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're
right. One of my favorite stretches of this entire show is the first half hour, maybe 20 minutes or so of episode 5 called Time and Again, which is the it's just this sort of like elongated flashback where we see the partition actually taking place and we meet the great grandmother and the person that she has eventually fell in love with, Hassan, and you know there's this uniting between clandestine and human, right, which is again a parallel between Pakistani and Indian, which yeah, and it also like you know takes like the time to talk to us about history and teach us about history, you know.
One of the best things about the show is how much I learned. Like there's so much things I didn't know, and it's like,
absolutely.
Oh, that's a fun fact. I didn't know that was a thing.
Absolutely, the partition is wild. Like there is a. I'm not going to go into it, but the, you know, look into. I think it was General Mountbatten. Like you know, he was this British, obviously this British kind of like general, like or higher up sort of like guy. He's the one who kind of like orchestrated the partition. Basically, India being a continent, well, a country, Pakistan not even existing, and then you know the separation between Hindus and Muslims, and all the Muslims going to Pakistan, Hindus staying in India. It was wild. It was a wild time for the British as well. Like it was, it's crazy just how much time the show took to really teach us that. But like also, I feel like that episode should have been an episode on its own, you know, like with that and not split up and bring us back to Miss Marvel sort of like closing that portal.
I gotta be honest with you. I struggled with that episode. I really did because... Look, I understand it's important to the character and the culture and all that. And so I'm not saying it's bad by any means, but it was so wildly different to everything else. And it just kind of made me go, and it was like while everything was ramping up on the superhero side of things, so it kind of felt like a bit of a blocker for me. Yeah,
the placement of it was a bit strange. But have you, okay, so look, I'm not spoiling anything here. Are you watching Better Call Saul right now?
Oh yeah, yeah. You're right. The most recent episode, Nippy. So yeah, you're right. So that episode was wildly different to every other episode of Better Call Saul.
And came at a point in the show where you were like, "What the fuck?" Like, you know what I mean? Like the last.
Well, I feel like they wrapped up all the other loose ends, and then it's like you got three episodes left. So what's going to happen now? And they've been hinting at this, and I don't know if you have, but like I went on YouTube afterwards and I was like, who's this Jeff guy again? Realized that he's been a character that's established. Yep. They just changed the actor.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I noticed that every flash forward
Pat Healy
setting up stuff in this episode. And so it didn't feel as out of place for me. And I think maybe it's because it was still Saul. Like I feel like a lot of this episode, time and again, I wasn't spending a lot of time with Kamala. Maybe if she had more of a presence.
Mm-hmm.
But also maybe I'm biased, you know, maybe I've got some weird cultural bias.
See, I like when something on the surface that should be shallow takes the time to teach us about history and go into historical elements and really is accurate about it. So I think maybe that's why I really kind of latched onto episode 5. Plus the guy who plays Hassan puts in a great performance when they're at the train station.
Yeah.
You know, he's crying out to her and I'm just like, oh, good God, kill me.
Yeah. Look, I'll be honest. Like, this is something I don't think I've ever said in all my years of podcasting about movies is like, I don't know my opinion on this. Like, I haven't really thought about it a lot. I know it wasn't connecting with me as much as the other episodes, but I couldn't give you a reason why. Maybe it was just my mood that day. Who knows? Yeah, look, let's talk about some other elements of the show. Something very controversial going into the show was her powers. And something I said on the podcast before it even dropped was just like, look, this character has not even existed for 10 years in this as Kamala Khan. It's so early in her history. It's like, I'm okay if you change them up a little bit. Her original powers weren't very interesting anyways, I feel. And I'm just going to come out and say it. Her powers in the show are badass. Like, I think they're so much cooler. She's got this, like, the way that she makes these little ramps, it's almost like it's Fortnite, the way she runs up. And people were saying, oh, it's like discount Green Lantern. I'm like, nah, it's visually different enough for me to be interesting. Like
in Infinity War, when Doctor Strange and the Guardians are kind of fighting.
Yes.
And Doctor Strange does a little platforms for Star-Lord, right?
Yeah, maybe that inspired it a bit. I think it's also thematically good that they made her cosmic since they want a bit more cosmic so they can connect them more to Captain Marvel. And I think the whole concept of the bracelet, which, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I don't think the bracelet's from the comics. But
Is it cosmic?
Dimensional magic?
Yeah, because it's more Ten Ringsy, right? So, like, the Ten Rings, they're not really... I mean,
Shang-Chi, they never actually explained the origin of it, I believe. But I think it's implied it's magic. And I only say cosmic because she said it felt cosmic. But you're right. Like, it's not really well explained. But you know what? It's a superhero movie.
Right.
I'm okay if it's not explained that well. I just want the cool stuff to do cool stuff. And I think it's visually a lot more interesting. So did you have any, like, thoughts or gripes against that or anything?
Yeah, look, I'm not a purist, you know, like, I mean, like, I haven't read any of the comic books, so I don't have like a pre-existing attachment or anything like that. But like, also when I read about these kinds of things of, like, you know, her powers being changed, I mean, like, that's, you know, we've talked about this back when Upcoming Attractions used to be on Midnight Double Feature, right? Like, I mean, that's the nature of adaptations, right? Like, I mean, the definition of adaptation means to change. So, like, you know, what works in one medium doesn't necessarily work in another. And I know, you know, there's like fucking people twittering and tweeting and shit about, like, oh, if you could make Fantastic Four work, Mr. Reed Richards, then how do you not make Kamala work?
Oh, yeah,
and I'm just like, man, like, I don't know. Maybe they just didn't want to have two stretchy characters. I don't fucking know. But like,
and also, honestly, that's a totally fair point. Like, why have two people with the same power? You know, pretty much.
But like, it's just kind of like one of those things of like, I don't care as long as it works in the story, and it does, you know.
I agree, and you still get the big hands. Like, she's mostly known for having these big hands. There are multiple scenes where her hands go
big.
This is
kind of like one of those things that I really get annoyed about with, like, fan bases. You know, like, I mean, Obi-Wan Kenobi had so many of these. Star Wars fan base. Yeah, that show annoyed me, but like some of the smaller things that annoyed other people really didn't, I didn't give a shit about. But like, this is absolutely one of those things of like, man, I just like, if it works in the story for me, then that's completely fine. They can, again, totally. It's an adaptation.
The talking about fan bases, I won't spend too much time on this, but something I found interesting is, so since leaving Midnight Double Feature, we've done, bless you, and we've done things like our main focus of upcoming attractions has been TikTok and posting clips to that. And it's such a weird platform because you're just exposed to strangers and anyone can comment on your shit. And the weird thing is they're not hearing the full conversation. You're hearing 1 minute clips.
Right.
And so what I've realized when it comes to things like Star Wars and Marvel fans, they're technically not movie
fans. They want hot takes. They just want hot takes.
Or they'll hear hot takes, but they like to yell at hot takes too. And right. I've got, and I'll come at things as a movie fan who will talk about, you know, story structure and character development and all that. And then when I criticize something like that, or people will be like, well, in the comics is this or blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, okay. These 12-year-olds make me want to blow my brains out because it's fan base.
You're Martin Scorsese to them. You're basically saying they're not cinema, right?
That's the interpretation, but it's like, no, like I can, and they'll be like, you're not a real Marvel fan. You're not a real Star Wars fan. Like, no, I can like Star Wars. I can like Marvel and still have criticisms. And the reason I have criticisms is because I love it so much. That's the way I've got some to talk to. And the sad thing is too, is like, I feel like a show like Miss Marvel, some people are always just not going to like it. One, because of cultural biases. That's a nice way of saying racism. Now. And then also, let's be honest, like these are male-dominated fan bases that generally don't click with female superheroes. Hero. Yeah. Like everyone
this
hated...
This is the lowest watched TV show from Marvel, by the way.
I'm not surprised. And it's sad because it's one of the best. The problem is too, is like it's aimed at a younger crowd and, you know, a lot of fandoms are like, oh, it has to be mature and right, how come Venom doesn't have all this blood and you know, why aren't we having gore in a Punisher movie? And like sometimes that's fair criticism, but like not everything has to be dark and gritty and serious. Sometimes.
Well, not everything needs to be the same, right? I mean, like not everything. So people, I guarantee you, people are going to riot when Daredevil is not the same as Daredevil Netflix. And they've already come out and said that this is a different Daredevil than the one we've seen on the Netflix show. They already said that, like, I think 2 days ago or something. So, like, what works for one, again, one adaptation doesn't really necessarily work for another adaptation, especially when they're trying to fit it into this interconnected universe. But,
I'm really curious to see how Daredevil goes because, on one hand, I feel like Disney may want to try and make it as similar as Netflix show as possible. Just because of, you know, making that fan base happy. You know, the same reason why they're doing X-Men 97. But on the other hand, it's like if they want to create a connected cinematic universe, the tones have to be able to fit at some level. And, you know, that's why Venom and Morbius aren't, they won't let them connect to the MCU because one, they feel like they're made in 2006. And two, like the quality of characters and writing is not the same. And so if Daredevil is going to connect to the rest of the cinematic universe, they're going to need to make some changes. And that's the other thing. It's like, that's why I'm worried about Deadpool 3. It's like, I feel like they've said they've made it R, but I feel like it's going to be really standalone. But we'll see. We'll see. They're doing all sorts of weird multiverse stuff now and making things you think wouldn't work. So we'll see. Let's get back to the show, to Ms. Marvel though. What else is there to reflect on? Okay, the big hot topic that people all talk about is the whole mutant element. I feel like we have to mention mutants or the comments will be like, how come you don't talk about mutants? Do you have any particular take on
it's
that?
It's the same. I have the same take as her powers. I mean, again, adaptation, but also... Isn't this a bit more interesting than her being an inhuman? Like, isn't this like, I mean, you know, you can be mad at it because it's Kamala Khan being the first mutant in the universe that's confirmed to be a mutant. But like, I mean, it's interesting to see it from what from how, like, how this is going to affect her character moving forward. I think, you know,
yeah.
And who else in her family is a mutant? That's, I mean, if it is genetic, you know.
Yeah. So I know in the comics she was an Inhuman, and the creators originally wanted to make her a mutant, but Marvel said no because of the rights with Fox. And so
she's
Inhumans
supposed to be a mutant all the time, the entire time.
So it's kind of worked out. And Inhumans have always stood in as a, we don't have mutants, so these are the replacement mutants. But Kevin Feige hates Inhumans, so it's kind of nice we can sweep Inhumans under the rug and have this as a backdoor intro to mutants.
Do you reckon Kevin Feige does hate Inhumans? Because I mean, he's put one of them in his movies already, so I don't know. Well, I think Kevin Feige
hates Inhumans, but he loves Easter eggs and making fans happy. So I think that's why that happens. But that's also, I believe, at the same time, Marvel saying Inhumans aren't, we're not going to see them again, I think. Because the only time we've seen Inhumans was that terrible TV show, which was meant to be a movie. And the second Kevin Feige had no one to answer to, he switched it from a movie to a TV show, which had like $0 budget.
Well,
and then,
from what I listened to just recently, like a podcast, I think Feige was all for making it a movie. But the, God, who's the other guy? There was another guy.
I forget. He's in charge of the toys and shit.
Yes.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, you know who I'm thinking about. But
and he's known for being cheap as well.
He kind of like lost a, so Kevin Feige kind of like lost a sort of like an argument with him back when Kevin Feige didn't have that much pull, sort of thing. So you know, this other guy, oh God, it's killing me that I don't remember his name.
is it Bob or Bill? I feel like it's a really generic name. Look, my understanding was the situation was, so he was in charge of Marvel because he did in the 90s, he made a lot of money off the toys and stuff. So Feige still had to answer to him, but Feige went over his head to, I forget the CEO of Disney, and it was like, this guy's making it hard for me to make movies. And so they're great, we'll fuck him off. And then they put him in a whole separate, they made Marvel Studios separate from Marvel.
Was it Jeff Loeb? I don't think it was Jeff Loeb.
No, it wasn't. I don't think it was Jeff Loeb. No.
Okay. Whatever, but yeah, anyway, so look, that this is all beside the point. So I mean, like my whole thing is just like, yeah, like I think this is more interesting for the character overall.
Totally. Any other major plot points or elements that you think are worth touching on?
Outside of the end credits scene, which we can talk about, you know, I really think overall the show had a lot of potential, and I think it did. Overall, it did do a great job of delivering us 6 entertaining episodes. You know, like you gotta think about, like, you know, like not. Yes, it does sit within the stature of the MCU, right? And but like it is also introducing us to a new character. And I think
great introduction too.
I think it is a great introduction. You know, I think with the 2 shows where Marvel have introduced us to new heroes, both Moon Knight and Miss Marvel are pretty fucking solid. Like, you know, just in terms of introducing us to the characters. I'm not saying like plot wise or anything like that, but like I know who Kamala Khan is now. I know who Moon Knight is now. Like, you know, like his 3 personalities.
And what I love about both the introduction of Moon Knight and Miss Marvel, they were released pretty much back to back in terms of Marvel shows, and they're so different. Like, Moon Knight is one of the darker MCU projects we've had so far. And, you know, it's clearly taken influence from like The Mummy and all sorts of other trippy stuff. And Miss Marvel is this complete, like, you know, like the little animations and squigglies, it's like Diary of a Wimpy Kid type stuff, you know?
I want to shout out these 2 directors, Adil and Bilal. They directed the first episode and the last episode, and they directed Bad Boys for Life. They've just got a great energy about them. I think they're also tapped to direct the Beverly Hills Cop remake.
yeah, that's a good choice. I didn't know that, but they'd be good for that. Yeah. I will say, speaking of like little animations and stuff, as much as I love them and I think they do great to help separate the show from the rest and it helps capture the tone, I feel like halfway through, they just forgot about that stuff. I wish it was a bit more consistent throughout all the episodes. I feel like in the first couple episodes, we had a lot of it. And then it came back in the final episode. In the middle, it was gone. And I wonder, with all the controversy lately about Marvel with the VFX studios and how overworked they are, maybe they had to cut down to make some space for other shows or something. Who knows? But I really wish there was a little bit more of that spread throughout. But that's a nitpick. That's such a nitpick. Captain Marvel. I was waiting the whole show. I was like, look, Captain Marvel didn't do the best. This is the chance to redeem Captain Marvel. I was hoping she would have a huge presence in this. No, gets the saving up for the Marvels movie. That's fine. But here's a fun fact. I didn't know she was in this because I watched the whole show.
Oh, you didn't do what an MCU guy does.
Well, here's my complaint about a lot of these Marvel shows. Not every episode has an end credit scene. And
but the last one would, right? But hasn't all the last ones have?
Yeah, but wasn't the mutant one also an end credit scene? Or is that still part of the thing? No, okay, my bad. Okay, so I think I fast-forwarded a bit, must have missed it, and go, oh, okay, there must not be anything. And then literally half an hour before we recorded, I was like, oh, I haven't watched in a few weeks. I might like listen to a podcast or something just to refresh my memory. And like, they're like, oh, and Captain Marvel's at them. Like, hang on, wait. And I just ran on YouTube. Like, oh, there we go. We get 3 seconds of Brie Larson in Kamala's room, which is kind of funny. But I wish she had more of a presence to like sort of help redeem the character, because I thought her small appearance in What If was fantastic. I thought it was the best we've seen Captain Marvel yet, fighting Thor. But what do you think of Ms. Marvel and Captain Marvel moving forward?
What do you think
of that scene?
I'm not particularly on board with Captain Marvel having a bigger presence in the show, only because I think the show does what it does succeed in is making Ms. Marvel such a sort of like a hero, like, you know,
I was expecting that and wanting that. But by the end of the show, I will admit, I'm glad we didn't have it. I love that she got the word Marvel from something to do with her culture and not Captain Marvel.
Dude, that
was amazing.
That scene on the rooftop might be one of my favorite scenes in the entire show.
Is that accurate? Does Marvel mean, or is it perfect?
Kamal. Yeah, yeah. So Kamal, look, I don't know because they're speaking Urdu, which is a different language to Hindi. So yes, Pakistanis speak Urdu because it's the Arabic language. So Yeah, but like there is some sort of like crossover, but I don't really know that. But if that is true, that is outstanding. That is awesome.
Yeah, because I don't think that's from the original comic, but it must have been at least a thought if it all lines up, because that's too perfect to be, you know, that's just so perfect. It's such a magical moment.
Yeah, it's awesome. But yeah, look, I think going forward, this is one of the more exciting post-credit scenes I've had in a while, just because it sets up a lot of potentially what happens in the Marvels. And they have confirmed that, you know, she is swapping time and space, like she's in a different place now in the universe. When I say she, Ms. Marvel, so they've kind of like did a little bit of swapsy. They didn't, you know, she didn't transform into Captain Marvel or anything. So it's just going to be interesting to see Kamala be incredibly out of her depths moving forward with the Marvels TV show, the Marvels movie, sorry. But I really can't wait for the scene in the Marvels when Brie Larson walks down the stairs and into like has to just like talk to the family. Like, I can't, like, that needs to happen.
I can't wait for them to meet too. I want Kamala to full on fangirl. That's going to be so amazing.
Yeah.
I will say for the Marvels though, I'm a little, I don't know, like, I love that they got a new director because I feel like the last two didn't do a great job. But Nia DaCosta, I wasn't crazy about Candyman.
I think visually it was awesome. So I'm curious to see how it does visually.
Visually it was great. But yeah, we'll see. Like there's many moving parts to make in a film and it's a completely different genre. So we'll see. Cool beans, cool bananas, cool runnings. before we wrap things up, Was there anything else that you thought was worth bringing up?
Not particularly. I just, again, just wanted to highlight that, you know, this was a weird TV show for me just because, well, it was a weird piece of media for me just because, like, I was able to see the criticism, like the stuff that I was critical about, but ultimately I didn't really care. Like, you know, I was and am so eager to set my criticism aside just because the characters are really well-rounded, I think. You know, the characters are really solidly written. It's just the, like, what they're doing and what the plot makes them do is a bit shaky. And that's fine. Like, you know, I kind of, like, look at this as, like, more of a TV show where the characters are just more of a priority than the story, which is, you know, it's fine.
Totally fine.
I actually prefer, you know, like characters, like strong characters, you know, because, you know, they're the ones that ultimately keep coming, like, make me keep coming back, you know, like Better Call Saul, you know, we don't know the story of Better Call Saul, but we keep coming back for the characters, right? I mean, we don't know how it plays out, but we keep coming back for the characters. So, yeah, this show just absolutely nailed character and setting like no other Marvel TV show has before. And I think that is incredible. I think, you know, having a Muslim-centric TV show in a day and age like this is an absolute knockout. I think that's really, really, you know, like, they're kind of wearing their hearts on their sleeves, Disney are, with this show. And, you know, whether it's quite virtual, virtue signaling, whatever, it is what it is. But, hey, I had a great fucking time, man.
Last question. And there's no way to know the answer to this unless it's been announced and I don't know. But do you think it's going to get a season 2?
Oh, I think so. Yeah? Absolutely. I do think, yeah, because, I mean,
because not all Disney Plus shows are getting a second season.
No.
Right? Yeah.
No, not all Disney Plus shows are getting a second season. Loki obviously is, What If is, but, I think there's a lot of room here to explore this character in this setting more. I don't love that we got the parents. So, like, the one arc that I would like to have seen sort of, like, stretched out a little bit more is the parents. Them being a bit more accepting, well, you know, completely accepting of Kamala's adventures and the fact that she's going to be Miss Marvel. I would have liked to see that fleshed out a little bit more, and explored a little bit more. So, you know, we're probably going to get more about the bangle. We're probably going to get more about this other dimension. But I think there's a lot set up for season 2, if not the Marvels. So, yeah.
Yeah. Moving forward, I'd love to see a lot more of the red daggers. I thought they were really cool. Or whatever's left of them, I guess. I'm interested about this whole djinn concept, if that's going to be explored more. And I think if they want to dive more into the parents, it could be really a good source of comedy if they want to, like, dive into, like, hey, what's it like to be the parents of a superhero that still lives at home? Like, there could be a lot of really comedic. Like, just imagine, like, the Marvels opens up with her dad fixing the door that she broke when she swapped out with Captain Marvel, you know? Little things like that. But Zoheb, thank you so much for joining us today here at Upcoming Attractions. You're always welcome back. Anytime, my friend, you see a show or movie and you're like, Matt, I want to talk about it, I'll get you right on here. I
totally
do miss
appreciate
you.
That, man. Thank you.
I do miss you, my friend. And as for everybody else, as I said before, we'll be bringing a few more episodes over the next coming weeks or so. Bit from the vault, so you'll hear us talk about some movies that have already come out, and you can laugh at us when we're wrong, and you can agree with us when we're right, because we'll be predicting films that hadn't come out yet, but they have been out, and that's what it is when you have a vaulted episodes. As for now, I know I seem fine, but I have a surgery coming up, so I can't commit to consistently podcasting at the moment, but in a few months things should be back to normal, and yeah, thank you so much for your patience, and shouts to everyone who's supporting us. If you want to help support the show, the best way to do it is by just following us on social media. Give us a like on Facebook or Instagram. Instagram, we're really trying to push out the reels more now. And as I'm sure a lot of you guys already have us on TikTok, follow us there. Be sure to give us a 5-star review on iTunes or Spotify. Did you know Spotify, you can review podcasts now?
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah.
I just saw it recently. That's cool. Give us 5 stars on Spotify if you're feeling generous. Anyways, I'm Matt. That's Zoheb. We love you very much. Thanks for joining us. Laters.